Good morning. I'm preaching to you this morning from Ecclesiastes chapter 1. We've been preparing ourselves to cross over the threshold and to begin the book of Ecclesiastes, and lately we've been moving and stretching and getting ourselves pointed in the direction of true blessedness or lasting happiness. We've been thinking a lot lately about true and lasting wellness and true safety and true tranquility of soul, lasting contentment, lasting satisfaction. We've been spending some time thinking about what the real foundation is that these things can be built upon. We all want to be glad. We all want to find contentment. We want things that are durable. We all want things that will last because we want our happiness to last. And we know that restful contentment is a good thing to have. And so one way or another, we're always trying to find it. Maybe we're trying to find it in the things around us. Maybe we're trying to find it in the circumstances that we think can deliver this contented happiness to us. We naturally crave stability. We naturally crave reliability in the things around us. We want the provisions, and we want the circumstances that are predictably stable. After all, it is nice, isn't it, when the day goes as you hoped it would go. We seem to just naturally know that uncertainty and the surprises that it brings are a potential threat to our happiness. So we tend to not like surprises. We are expert negotiators because we're always trying to negotiate with the risks around us, with the uncertainties around us. We're always trying to reduce those things down to comfortable and manageable levels so that our happiness doesn't get damaged. But as believers, we are learning to recognize how all too easily we can try to build lasting happiness on foundations that are just crumbling into dust. And despite all that you may know and embrace of the gospel and of God's grace and of the certain expectation of glory, nevertheless, I'm sure you can still see how you struggle with the soul sickness of idolatry and the soul sickness of pretending that somehow the toil to dust reality can be avoided. Well, Ecclesiastes is a portion of God's Word that is good medicine for these sicknesses of the soul. But strong, persistent disease and corruption requires strong medicine. And this medicine will at times seem so bitter, and it will at times seem so unpleasant as to be almost impossible to take. But it is for the healing and the strengthening of your soul. This book is not a children's aspirin. This book is theological chemotherapy, where it will seep into the deepest portions of your thinking, and it will expose hidden fears, and it will expose secret struggles, and it will go to work to kill off false hopes so that true hope can thrive. It will at times painfully kill off those unrealistic expectations that keep disappointing you. And it's going to go to work to kill off those unrealistic expectations that keep frustrating your happiness. And all of this is needed for the growth and for the survival of biblically informed, realistic expectations. So again, I have to ask the question, what are you really hoping for in this life? What are your expectations? What are you really expecting to get out of this world? What are you really expecting to get out of this life? What are you expecting of yourself? What are you expecting from the toilsome labor of your hands? This book, this medicine, can do much to kill off hopes or expectations that will only harm you and that will only disappoint you. And this medicine can nourish the hopes and expectations that will stabilize and strengthen your soul in a big bad world. Okay, so you ready? Theological chemotherapy. And so now we're at the door, we're at the portal, and we hear this. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Now just a brief note about this. The word for preacher there is a very difficult word to translate. It's built on the same root word for congregation or assembly. And so what does this mean here? Well, the writer is probably being identified because of some role or responsibility that he had in the congregation or the assembly. He's preaching, he's speaking, and so most translations simply bring it over into this title of the preacher. He's the congregational speaker. He's going to preach to us, and I'll refer to him as the preacher. So when I'm saying that, I'm not talking, when I say today the preacher, it's not me, it's him, and or I'll refer to him more simply as the writer. Okay, so let's walk through the door. But speaking of unpleasant surprises, I have one for you. We're not walking into a house. We're walking out. It is true, we're walking through a door, but we're going outside. We're going outdoors. And I don't know if you like that idea or not. I suspect that you like the inside of your house, where you have everything arranged and it's your safe place, where everything is arranged for your comfort and for predictability. Everything's nice and neat and clean and in its place. You like that. But we're stepping outdoors. We're going to go outside into the big bad world where there are bugs and where sometimes it's too hot and sometimes it's too cold. We're going to go outside where there are all kinds of threats and risks and all kinds of uncomfortable circumstances and arrangements. We're going to go outside where there are all kinds of unpleasant and very messy sights and smells and sounds that would never be allowed in your house. Well, too bad. Too bad for you. Too bad for me. Because Ecclesiastes is going to yank us out of the door and is going to take us on a rather strenuous and at times very uncomfortable adventure and is going to put you right into the mess and is going to make you think about how messy this big bad world is, and it's going to make you think about how unpredictable it is, and it's going to make you think about how beyond your control it really is. Okay, so we hardly have our foot over the threshold. We're being pulled out into this big bad world. And here's the preacher. And he's ready with his opening statement. He's ready with his thesis. He's ready to tell us here at the very beginning what his main point of the entire book will be. Let's listen to what he has to say. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Well, we've hardly stepped outside into the bright sunshine. We don't even have a chance to get acclimated. And here is this rather rude-sounding preacher right in our face saying, all is vanity. But let's be very careful with that word. The NIV translates the word as meaningless, and the NIV is horribly mistaken. The preacher is not crying out with his hands in the air and saying that there's no meaning to anything. He is not saying that there is no point to anything. In fact, in this very book, we will learn to find meaning. In fact, in this very book, we will learn to discover purpose. The preacher isn't saying that there's no purpose to anything. The preacher is not saying that all is meaningless. He's not saying that all is without any point or purpose. He's using a word that we heard back in Psalm 39, where David said, certainly every man at his best state is but what? Vapor. And there's our word, vapor. David uses that word to say that our life is like a breath. It's like a vapor. Our life, this here and now life, it is like a small wisp of smoke on a windy day. And so here the preacher uses the very same word, not to say that there's no point to anything, not to say that there's no meaning or that there's no purpose to anything. He is saying here at the very beginning, all is vapor. All is a breath. All is a shadow. All is a passing image under a tree on a brief day. It grows in the morning, and it moves around, and it fades at the end of the day. David said that every person at the height of their strength may in fact be strong, but they are still just a strong shadow. And this right here is the main point upon which all of the other conclusions in this book will be built. All is vanity, says the preacher. All is a vapor. All is shadow. All is passing image. All is a wisp of smoke. All is a single breath on a cold morning. All is the tiniest wisp of steam from your teacup or your coffee mug. All is a temporary vapor that eludes all of your clever attempts to grab it and to save it. This is the foundation upon which the house of Ecclesiastes is built. This is the starting point to gain the wisdom that is in this book. Vanity of vanities, the preacher says to you. Vapor of vapors, shadow of shadows, all is just a single breath on a cold morning. All is a vapor that you cannot control and that you cannot catch and save. So if you will accept this, and if you will be willing to begin this, at times, uncomfortable journey with these steps of humility, then and only then will you be ready to listen to the rest of the guidance of this preacher. But you have to start there. And then the next thing that the preacher does is that he asks us a question. Now, at this point, maybe you're already wincing for what the question's going to be. But here it is. He asks it. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. Well, if you are willing to accept the opening statement about vapor, then you know what the honest answer is to his question. You already know it, don't you? What is the profit margin? From all your wearisome, toilsome labor in this life, I can almost hear it. Some of you already want to protest. Some of you may already be squirming. You want to protest and you want to say, well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. This life isn't all there is. There's a life beyond. What about that? Well, the preacher wouldn't argue with you. The preacher wouldn't foolishly say to you that this life is all there is. He just isn't talking about that right now. He's not talking about what happens after this life. He wants you right now to give the honest answer about profit or gain or any lasting savings, any lasting advantage that you can gather from your labor under the sun. That's what he wants you to do at this point. Here's his question. What lasting inheritance can you gain by your toil in this here and now life on this earth under the sun? What's the honest answer to that? At the end of your hard life, you will have, or what will you have from under the sun to show for all of your toil and for all of your battle against the thorns and the thistles? What's the bottom line to a lifetime of toil? What profit will it be to you if you could gather to yourself everything available under the sun? Well, the honest answer is nothing. It's none. There is no profit. There is no gain. There is no lasting advantage from our toil. Adam spent 930 years laboring with painful, frustrating, disappointing toil, with sweat on his face, with blood on his calloused hands, and even after all of that time, he was never able to say by his own labor that he had finally arrived, that at last he had found under the sun the place, or the provision, or the circumstance which would at last give him lasting contentment. 930 years and Adam couldn't say it. 930 years and by his own toil, by his own hands, even Adam could not say that he had found the place or the provision or the circumstance for lasting happiness and for unending ease of soul. What lasting thing did Adam have by his own toil? The honest answer is nothing. Nothing. What's the profit? What's the gain? What's the advantage? The honest answer is none. None. Again, David says from Psalm 39, he says, certainly every man at his best state is but vapor. And surely every man walks about like a shadow. Surely they busy themselves, how? In vain. There's our word again. He heaps up riches, but does not know who will end up gathering them. What lasting profit or permanent advantage, what moth-proof and rust-proof inheritance can a man or a woman earn and collect and save in this life under the sun? Well, the answer is none. As it was for Adam, so it has remained unchanged. After all of this time, haven't we made any progress? After all this time, haven't we made any progress from the day that God told Adam that from dust he was made and to dust he would return? The preacher wants you to think about the generations that have come and gone. How many generations have come and gone, laboring and toiling and sweating and bleeding and battling against the thorns and the thistles? And has any change been brought to this earth that has improved this toil to dust cycle, this toil to dust way that things are? The answer is no. No change has been brought to that. Has there been any generation able to break out of this dust to toil to dust cycle? What lasting change, the preacher is wanting us to think about this. What lasting change have all of these passing shadows brought to the earth? The shadows come and the shadows go. The vapors rise and they dispel, but the earth remains as it was. A breath is exhaled on a cold morning and it is for a brief moment, and the earth shrugs its shoulders and continues on as it was before that vapor even came along. So it's a difficult question, isn't it? It's a difficult question about the realities of a fallen creation, and you have to answer it truthfully. Well, to convince you, the preacher has three illustrations. Think now about the sun and the wind and the waters. We start here at verse 5. Here's his first illustration. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The sun here is personified as if it were a laborer, a worker. The sun gets up in the morning. The sun begins its work. It rises in the east, it goes down in the west. Look at the sun. Look at it laboring. Look at it toiling. Look at it sweating. Look at it bleeding. And the text tells us it hastens. It's a word that means to gasp or to pant. Look at the sun laboring and toiling with hardly enough breath. Every day it rises to gasp and to pant and to try and summon all of its strength, all of its inner resources. And where does it end up after all of its toil? Only back to where it started. And you're thinking, that sort of sounds like something I've heard from Genesis 3. It toils. It toils with a weary gasping only to finish where it started. After all of its labor, does the sun arrive at a place where it can say, at last, soul, take your ease, I am at last fulfilled. Yes, I have worked hard enough, and finally I have gathered by my toil the goods that will give me rest and contentment. Can the sun say that? No. After all of its wearisome toil, its end is where it started. What profit? What net gain? What advantage has the sun acquired from all of its labor? Its toil can only take it back to where it started. Day after day, year after year, 100 years after 100 years, 1,000 years after 1,000 years after 1,000 years. And has the sun been able to scratch and claw and work itself out of the dust to toil to dust cycle? It pants, it gasps for breath, it toils with unimaginable power only to return to where it started. Yes, you might say, yes, okay, I'll take that, but I'm not stuck on some loop. I'm free. I'm free to decide. I'll decide to move here and do that, or I'll decide to move over there and do that. And so the preacher says, that's fine, so let's think about the wind. The wind goes toward the south and it turns around to the north, he says. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. The wind also labors. It journeys around and around and around. Observe it for a moment. Observe this worker. Observe its wonderfully complicated and varied patterns. This direction and then that direction. Sometimes it's a gentle breeze. Sometimes it's the co-laborer with tornadoes and hurricanes. And what does the wind ultimately do? It returns to where it started. Sort of sounds like something from Genesis 3, doesn't it? By all of its labor and all of its toiling along its currents and paths and circuits, it still can only travel the roads that lead back home to where it all started. What profit, what net gain, what lasting advantage has the wind acquired from all of his labor? Its toil can only take it back to where it started. Look at the wind. He has still never found fulfillment. He has still never found contentment by his own toil. Day after day, year after year, 100 years after 100 years, 1,000 years after 1,000 years after 1,000 years, and has the wind been able to scratch and to claw and to work itself out of the dust to toil to dust cycle? Can even the wind say, "Ah, yeah, I've worked a long time, but now I have finally arrived. I have finally arrived where I no longer have to sweat, no longer have to bleed, I no longer have to gasp, I no longer have to go to battle against the thorns and thistles. I have finally gathered by my own toil the treasure of rest and contentment." Can even the wind say that? No. Notice that the preacher, in his third illustration, he then says, think about the powerful waters. Think about the majestic rivers. Think about the vast oceans. He says, all the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. Rivers are powerful, able to carve, able to shape to their desire, incredible canyons of sandstone, valleys of granite, with unimaginable force and determination, the waters rise and they do their labor. What words could we use to describe their eagerness? What words could we find to describe the power of this laborer? There would, at least to us, seem to be no limit to its willingness to sweat and its willingness to bleed and its willingness to toil beyond the ordinary limits of weariness. The waters labor to make their deposit and to give all the fruit of their labor into the great treasury of the oceans. But can the water look into his treasury? Can the water look into his barns and ever say to himself, "Ah, soul, you have labored, but you have finally arrived. At last, by my own labor, I finally have fulfillment. By my own labor, I have contentment." Can the waters ever say that? Can they ever say, "I have finally found ease and rest from the thorns and the thistles"? The water can't say that. The water labors with eagerness and it labors with power, but it is never fulfilled. It's never contented. It never works itself out of the dust to toil to dust cycle. Every day it rises to gasp and to pant and to summon all of its strength, to summon all of its inner resources. And where does it end up after all of its toil? Only back to where it first started. Day after day, year after year, 100 years after 100 years, 1,000 years after 1,000 years after 1,000 years. And what is the net profit? What is the gain? What is the lasting advantage that the water has from all of his labor in which he toils under the sun? The sun and the wind and the water have labored for millennia, and yet the fallen creation is still fallen, and the fallen creation still groans. You'll notice now that the preacher explains the point of the three illustrations. He says, all things are full of labor. Everywhere you look, now that we've been tugged outside and we're being made to look around, everywhere you look, it's like there's this blanket of weariness. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Here's the real point that he wants you to come around to. Think of the sun and the wind and the water, some of the most magnificent workers in all of creation, and they present to us a picture of the weary groaning of futility, toiling under the sun cannot deliver us from the dust, and it cannot deliver us into any final satisfaction, any final fulfillment, any final contentment, any real safety or tranquility of soul. We can't find, in fact, anything arriving at any final fulfillment or contentment or ease in the here and now. That is to say, under the sun. We can find that all things under the sun in the here and now are full of and are encircled by the endless weariness of toiling. All we can find under the sun is, as one commentator put it, constant motion without any lasting achievement. And this is so much so, as the preacher indicates to us here, that we humbly close our mouths because we can't find the words to express the depth of this groaning in futility on this earth. So by these illustrations, now the preacher wants us to look back upon ourselves. We look back now upon ourselves when the preacher says that we are the same way in that we cannot find fulfillment in the things under the sun. Notice what he says here. Basically, we use our senses to take in and to enjoy the things around us. We can see and we can hear. By all of our senses, we touch and we take in the world around us. And we can take in so much over a lifetime. so much over a lifetime. But it doesn't matter the beauty we perceive in colors and landscapes. It doesn't matter the beauty we enjoy with music or speech or natural wonders. Even after a lifetime of seeing and hearing and tasting and smelling and touching, you'll never be able to say, "Oh, yes, I can't take anymore. I finally arrived. I have, by the beauty I've taken in with my eyes or my ears or any of my senses, I have finally arrived by what I can sense under the sun. I have finally arrived at full and complete and lasting satisfaction." You'll never be able to say it, at least truthfully. Your eye, well, it's kind of like the ocean. It'll never be full. Your ear is kind of like the ocean. It'll never be full. You'll never, by the things that you can sense and take in by your senses under the sun, by those things, you'll never be able to say, "Oh, yes, now finally I can take my ease. I have been filled by these things with a true and lasting satisfaction and contented happiness." Yes? No. The sun, the wind, the waters, and all of humanity are gasping, panting, toiling, always in motion, never arriving at or any lasting achievement by that toil, never leaving behind for those who follow us any lasting achievement, never arriving at a place above the dust, never collecting a treasure under the sun that is safe from the moth or the rust. There are no exceptions to this. And so we must not expect of ourselves, and we must not expect of anything else under the sun to break this dust, to toil, and back to dust cycle. There's no exceptions. Notice what the preacher now says in verses 9 and 10. "That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, 'See, this is new'?" We imagine the preacher shaking his head and saying, No. It has already been in ancient times before us." Now, maybe you have quoted this verse without knowing really where it was or what it meant. All right? Maybe we've all done that at some point or another. Maybe you simply wanted to make a point, the simple point, well, some things never change. But nothing new under the sun here means that there's nothing that has ever come along, and there is nothing that will ever come along under the sun that will liberate this earth and this humanity out of these frustrating patterns of futility and vanity. That's what it means, that there's nothing new under the sun. The vapor that has been is the same vapor that will be. There has never been, and there never will be, a generation that has or will clean up this mess. What has been done is what? Dust to toil to dust. That's what's been done. What's being done? Dust to toil to dust. What will be? The same thing that has been. It will be dust to toil and back to dust. That is your life under the sun. It was the same for your parents. It will be the same for your children and for their children after. It has never been truthfully said, and it will never be truthfully said under the sun. Look over here. We discovered it. Look, we discovered the new thing. Look over here. We've discovered the new pattern, the new way to eat bread without sweat. Operators are standing by. It'll never be truthfully said. It'll never be truthfully said. Look, it's the new thing. It's the new pattern. It's the new way to work the ground without injury. We've discovered it. It's the way to have ease of soul. It's the way to have fulfilled contentment from our own labor. Is there anything under the sun among the here and now things to which anybody can point to and say, ah, there it is. There it is. It's the new thing that will save us and finally give us the profit, give us the gain, give us the lasting advantage, and it will guarantee us from having to go back to where we started. The preacher says, there's nothing new under the sun. As God said it to Adam, from dust were you made, and to dust you will return after a lifetime of toil. As God said it to Adam, so God says to all of Adam's children. And from Adam to us, there's nothing new under the sun. So we can hear the preacher sort of telling us that we need to quit pretending that it's anything different than that. We need to quit pretending that somehow we are the exception and that somehow we will achieve by our own toil what nobody else has ever been able to achieve before. And he goes on, we notice that we need to realize this as well, that whatever we do achieve will be completely forgettable. I told you this is not aspirin. This is chemotherapy for our souls. Notice what he says in verse 11. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. He's not saying that there aren't history books written. That's not his point. Listen to what he's saying. A lasting memorial of a generation would be their achievement of working themselves out of the dust. Now that would be worthy of our remembrance. That would be worthy of our unceasing remembrance of their achievement to rise above the futility of a fallen creation. We would build something to remember that. But what actually is true? Each generation scratches and claws and chases with great anxiety after contentment and after safety. And this earth is just as unimpressed with them as it has been or ever will be with any generation that comes. And despite all of the clamoring, and despite all of the motions that the generations have made, the past generations, with all of their toil, they pass into the forgetfulness of the generations that come after. I mean, a practical way to think about this is, can you name all of your grandparents? Can you speak of all of their notable achievements? Maybe you can name all of your grandparents. How about all of your great-grandparents? Can you name all of them? Just their names. How quickly we are forgotten. What are you hoping for? What are you hoping for? Is your hope that somehow, by your own toiling, You'll sweat enough. You'll bleed enough. You'll work hard enough. That you'll be the notable exception. And that you will conquer the rust and that you will conquer the moth by leaving a legacy of the great works under your name. Is that your hope? Matthew Henry put it this way. He said, many think that they have found satisfaction enough in this, that their names shall be perpetuated, that posterity will celebrate the actions they have performed, the honors they have won, and the estates they have raised, that their houses shall continue forever. But herein they deceive themselves. How many former things and persons were there, which in their day looked very great and made a mighty figure, and yet there is no remembrance of them, they are buried in oblivion. Every generation thinks that they are the one with the innovative cleverness or perhaps even the brutality to overcome the dust to toil to dust cycle of a fallen creation. And yet, what do we really see? Each generation fails to achieve any memorable victory over the vanity by their own toil. One generation follows another with the newer forgetting the older as it also toils away, but never finding lasting fulfillment by their toil. Well, let's take a moment to contemplate what we've heard from the text today. I suspect that what you have heard today is provoking all kinds of questions. Well, aren't we supposed to work hard? We're not supposed to be lazy, are we? Is there no meaning to our labor? Is there no point to getting up and going to work in the morning? What does all this mean? Does this mean that life is hopeless? What does this mean, that I'm supposed to go through life miserable, that I'm not supposed to enjoy anything? Well, hold on. The preacher has a plan. He will answer all of your concerns at the proper time. But here at the beginning, he's the one asking the questions. He's the one asking the questions. And the best thing for you to do right now is not to respond to his questions with your own questions. Really, the best thing for you to do here at the beginning is to listen to what he is saying, listen to what he is asking, and to agree with the honest answers that he gives. That's what you have to do right now. If you skip this first difficult step, you will stumble later on. If you skip this first step to this path or to this adventure, you can end up on a wrong or dangerous path. The path to true happiness and the path to true contentment and the path to true enjoyment in this life begins with this step, with this honest admission of how things really are and how you really are in this world. The preacher says that all under the sun is a vapor. You have to come to terms with that first before moving on to other things. He tells you that there is no ultimate lasting profit. He has told you that there's no lasting advantage that you can gain for yourself from your toil in a fallen creation. Yes, you can gather, and yes, you can collect, and yes, you can save up the stuff that is under the sun, but you will still die, and your stuff will belong to someone else. That is the first step to take to find out how to enjoy this life. you have to start with this first point that the preacher is making to you, or you will not manage yourself well in this life. You won't manage your work properly. You won't manage your discipleship properly if you try to skip this first difficult step. At first, it might sound like this preacher has gone off the rails, doesn't it? At first, it might sound like he has just fallen into a pit of hopelessness, but no, he's preaching to keep you from going off the rails. He's preaching so that you don't fall into a pit of hopelessness or into a pit of delusion. You have to begin by confessing that God's word is true and that there is no example under the sun where lasting rest and lasting contentment and lasting happiness and lasting safety is gained by the toiling of a fallen creature in a fallen world. You could toil for 930 years, and at the end, the final bottom line, the final profit statement with regards to a lifetime of toil would be what? That you returned to the dust from which you came. If you are hoping to collect something more than dust from the things of this fallen creation, then you are expecting something that this world just cannot deliver to you. If you are expecting of yourself, if you have put this pressure upon yourself to find the new thing or to be the exception to this, to work hard enough, to sweat hard enough, to bleed enough, to cry enough, to pull yourself out of this dust-to-toil cycle, then you are expecting something of yourself that you cannot deliver. These kinds of expectations will not lead you to fulfillment. I know they whisper in your ear and they tell you that they will, but they can't. These expectations will not lead you to fulfillment. They will not lead you to contentment. They will only leave you frustrated. They'll only leave you empty-handed. They'll only leave you ultimately without the real safety that you need. What is it that you are hoping for in this life, in the here and now, under the sun? What are you hoping for? What are you expecting? If this whole sermon is beginning to make you feel, in a certain way, discontent with the way things are, and if this sermon is, in a certain way, beginning to make you feel dissatisfied with the things under the sun, ooh, that's good. That's so good. Because you know what that means? The medicine is already starting to work. It's already starting to work. Because if you're beginning to feel that way, then you are responding in the right way. That's exactly the right way. That's exactly how this text is supposed to make you feel. If the preacher's opening statement has begun to make you long for something new, well, the medicine is beginning to work. If the preacher's opening statement is making you long for something that's different, for something that's above the sun, well, then now you're ready to hear the rest of his message. As a believer in the gospel promise, you might want to instead just skip this and only think about glory. However, if you don't first take your hope off of the things under the sun, you will end up really struggling to put your hope on the things that are above the sun and beyond this fallen creation. You want an example of this? How about from Luke 12 that we read earlier? There was one from the crowd who said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." In what had that man placed his hope for happiness and contentment and safety? In the profit of toil under the sun. And so Jesus said to that man, "Take heed. Beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Why is that true? Because even if that man had been given an inheritance of all the treasures under the sun, what would have been his profit? What would have been his lasting gain? What would have been his lasting advantage? Well, now you know the answer. Nothing. None. Not even a little, but nothing. Do you know why we need to be told that all under the sun is a fading vapor? And that we must not expect things from it that it cannot deliver? Do you know why we need to be told these things? Because we are naturally, by default, just like the rich fool who devoted himself to the anxious pursuit of things that could be stored in his barn because he thought that he could achieve what even the sun and the wind and the waters still haven't found. He thought he could toil hard enough to arrive at true and lasting happiness and contentment and fulfillment and safety. His hope, his devotion, his vision rose no higher than the very dust that he would return to. So if the opening words of Ecclesiastes are making you lift your devotion and lift your vision higher and to long for the kind of life that has a foundation and for the kind of life that has a quality that's greater than your food or your clothing or your shelter or your health or your life expectancy, ah, that's good. Medicine is already beginning to work. And now you're ready to begin putting your feet to the path of Ecclesiastes. Here's the final thing I'll say today. We are learning to pray as David did in Psalm 39. Lord, make me to know my end. Make me to know what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly, every man at his best state is but vapor. Surely, every man walks about like a shadow. Surely, they busy themselves in vain. He heaps up riches and does not know who will gather them. Ecclesiastes will push us to long for the right things and to say with David, "And now, Lord, what is it that I wait for? And now, Lord, what is my expectation? And now, Lord, what do I hope for? Now, Lord, what do I wait for? My hope is in you." David prayed this because he had become convinced of the truth that it was the forgiveness of his sins through the promised Savior, that was the profit, that was the gain, that was the real advantage for him. Lord, teach me to release my grip. Lord, teach me to tighten my grip. David had to release his anxious grip on rocks to better grasp true gold. And so the Lord has worked today to pry our fingers and to pry our hope for happiness away from vanity and away from fading vapors so that we can learn how to live this life serving and being devoted to the right master. He knows our frame. He remembers that we are but dust. We are like grass. We are like the flower of the field. That is our flourishing. The wind passes over us, and we are quickly forgotten. That's the essence of this opening statement of Ecclesiastes. And if all of this is beginning to disturb you enough to seek something that is everlasting for a contented, everlasting happiness, then you have today received what the preacher had to say.